Io, now Yonilansa shall defend his doctoral dissertation, titled Developing Temporal Analysis for Computer-Supported Collaborative Learning in the Context of Scaffolded Inquiry Learning. And Professor Markus Benaste from University of Tartu shall act as an opponent. My name is Raija Hämäläinen, and as a custos appointed by the Faculty of Education and Psychology, I declare this public examination open.
Esteemed Kastos, honored opponent, ladies and gentlemen, hyvä yleisö täällä ja etäyhteyksien päässä. Viime aikoina olemme kaikki kehittyneet. Olemme kehittyneet epävarmuuden sietämisessä, olemme kehittyneet teknologian hyödyntämisessä, kun maito on loppu ja leipäpussissa on vain murut jäljellä. Ja ennen kaikkea olemme kehittyneet käsien pesusta. Kehittymistä seuraa edeltää usein kehittäminen. Ajattelinkin puhua nyt kehittämisestä. Kysyt ehkä, miksi ihmeessä? Ja vastaan siksi, että väitöskirjani otsikon ensimmäinen sana on kehittää, develop. Kerron, mitä olen väitöskirjassani kehittänyt ja miksi se on nyt pandemiakin keskellä erityisen tärkeää. Kerron, miten ja miksi olen kehittänyt opetusta. Kerron myös, miksi on ollut tärkeää kehittää oppimisen tutkimusta. Sivuan myös käsienpesua. Aloitan opetuksen kehittämisestä. Pandemia sekoitti oikeastaan vuosikymmenten aikana vakiintuneita oppimisen ja opetuksen käytänteitä. Tutut kasvot luokkahuoneissa vaihtuivat kasvojen takana olevien nimien alkukirjaimiin Teams-kanavilla. Kannustava kosketus epävarmuuden hetkellä vaihtui Zoomissa peukuttamiseen. Myös esittämämme kysymykset hyvästä oppimisesta ja opetuksesta muuttuivat. Oppija tai opettaja ei enää kysy, käyttäisinkö teknologiaa oppimisen tai opetuksen tukena, vaan miten käyttäisin teknologiaa oppimisen tai opetuksen tukena tarkoituksenmukaisesti. Niin, miten käyttäisin teknologiaa oppimisen tai opetuksen tukena tarkoituksenmukaisesti? Väitöskirjassani keskityin yliopisto-opetukseen ja opiskelijoihin ja erityisesti fysiikan oppimiseen. Fysiikka on eräs esimerkki alasta, jonka osaajien riittävyydestä julkisessa keskustelussa on kannettu huolta. Tärkeää onkin varmistua siitä, että luonnontieteet ovat tulevaisuudessa vetovoimaisia hakukohteita. Silti jopa tätäkin tärkeämpää on huolehtia niistä opiskelijoista, jotka aloittavat luonnontieteiden opiskelun yliopistossa. Luonnontieteillä kaikkialla maailmassa on haasteena opintojen keskeytymiset ja pitkittyneet valmistumisajat. Esimerkiksi Jyväskylässä alle kolmannes lukuvuonna 2010 ja 11 aloittaneista opiskelijoista valmistui 7 vuodessa fyysikoksi. Silti koronapandemian tai ilmastonmuutoksen kaltaisten maailmanlaajuisten ongelmien ratkominen suorastaan huutaa tässä hetkessä luonnontieteen osaajia. Jotta voisimme puuttua opintojen keskeytymiseen ja pitkittyneisiin valmistumisaikoihin, tutkimuksissa on vuosikymmeniä puhuttu opetuksen kehittämisestä ja sen tärkeydestä. Kehittäminen on usein sisältänyt pientä hienosäätöä ja erilaisten hyödyllistenkin kippojen sujauttamista vallitseviin käytänteisiin, kuten luentoihin ja tentteihin. Kokeilut ovat kuitenkin valitettavan usein jääneet kokeiluiksi, eikä niitä ole otettu pidempiaikaiseen käyttöön. Kun haasteena on opintojen keskeytymiset ja pitkittyneet valmistumisajat, pelkkä hieno säätö tai pikkujipot eivät välttämättä riitä. Välillä on tarpeen miettiä perusteellisimminkin, miten kehittää opetusta, vaikka monet käytänteet olisivat olleet jo vuosikymmeniä vallitsevia. Opetuksen kehittäminen pitää perustua tutkimusnäyttöön, ei omiin tottumuksiin ja perintötietoon. Täällä Jyväskylän yliopiston fysiikan laitoksella olemassa olevien käytänteiden kriittistä tarkastelua tehtiin reilut 4 vuotta sitten. Opetusta lähdettiin kehittämään tutkimusperustaisesti niin, että sekä opiskelukaverit että opettajat valjastetaan tukemaan opintojen etenemistä keskeytymisten välttämiseksi. Opettajaresurssia pitäisi siis käyttää aidompiin ja henkilökohtaisempiin kohtaamisiin opiskelijoiden kanssa. Miten tämä sitten on mahdollista? Ja vastaus on, hyödyntämällä teknologiaa oppimisen ja opetuksen tukena tarkoituksenmukaisesti. Pekka Koskinen, Jussi Maunuksella ja Heli Lehtivuori kehittelivät ideaa Primetime-oppimisen toimintamallista ja pääsin mukaan opettajaksi toimintamallin pilotointikurssille. Primetime-oppimisessa kantavana ajatuksena on kohdentaa aina yhtä rajallisia opettajaresursseja opiskelijoiden kohtaamiseen. Teknologisia oppimisympäristöjä voidaan käyttää joidenkin mekaanisten, mutta perinteisesti opettajille kuuluvien työvaiheiden suorittamiseen, tehtävien ohjeistamiseen, työskentelyn jäsentämiseen ja jossain määrin myös sen tukemiseen, tehtyjen suoritusten monitorointiin ja jossain määrin myös arviointiin ja palautteen antamiseen. Haluan korostaa, teknologia ei korvaa opettajaa, vaan se muuttaa opettajan roolia. Jaoimme opiskeluprosessin 4 vaiheeseen, jotka toistuivat viikoittain. Ensimmäisessä vaiheessa itse opiskeltiin teknologisessa oppimisympäristössä olevien lyhyiden videoiden ja myös perinteisen oppikirjan avulla kyseisen viikon keskeisiä käsitteitä. Toisessa vaiheessa, eli ryhmätunnilla, pienryhmät kokoontuivat sovittuun aikaan sopimassaan paikassa ilman opettajaa harjoittelemaan itse opiskeltujen käsitteiden soveltamista teknologisessa oppimisympäristössä. Kolmannessa vaiheessa opiskelijat ratkoivat avoimia ja monivaiheisia fysiikan ongelmia ja siten harjoittelivat näissä aiemmissa vaiheissa opiskeltujen käsitteiden soveltamista käytäntöön. Viimeisessä vaiheessa eli opetunnilla pienryhmä tapasi oma opettajan kanssa 2 kesken. Opetunti oli ryhmän laatuaikaa, prime timea opettajan kanssa. Tavoitteena oli vahva vuorovaikutus, joka mahdollisti hedelmälliset keskustelut ja opiskeluprosessin oikea-aikaisen tuen. Voisi sanoa, että tämä väitöskirja on syntynyt mielenkiinnosta mallin toista vaihetta, eli ryhmätuntia kohtaan. Väitöskirjani empiirinen osuus ja tavoite kytkeytyvät vahvasti ryhmätunnin tutkimusperustaiseen kehittämiseen. Kasvatustieteellisessä tutkimuksessa tällaista toimintaa, jossa pienryhmät ratkovat verkkoalustalla olevia tehtäviä, kutsutaan tietokoneavusteiseksi yhteisölliseksi oppimiseksi. Tietokoneavusteisesta yhteisöllisestä oppimisesta on tehty tutkimusta jo pitkään. Tämän alueen ensimmäinen konferenssikin tai työpaja järjestettiin jo vuonna 1991. Ja tämä on sattumalta sama vuosi, kun minä olen syntynyt, eli kyseessä on vähintäänkin varhaiseen aikuisikään keskittynyt tutkimusala. Näin ollen tietokoneavusteisesta yhteisöllisestä oppimisesta on olemassa varsin paljon kirjallisuutta. Tietoa sen hyödyistä ja haitoista eri oppimistilanteissa ja eri oppimistavoitteiden saavuttamisessa on runsaasti. Teknologiat ja myös vuorovaikutus oppimisessa ovat kuitenkin herättäneet ja herättävät edelleen tunteita. Ainakin kouluissa nuoret pitäisi riisua teknologioista tai ryhmätyöskentelyyn soluttautuu aina vapaamatkustajia ja siipeilijöitä. Silti yhteenvetona olemassa olevasta tutkimuksesta totean, sekä teknologia-avusteisuus että yhteisöllinen oppiminen hyödyttävät oppimisen prosesseja, kun niiden käyttöönotto on tarkoituksenmukaista. Tuskin kukaan meistä silti on tämänkään konsensuksen edessä sitä mieltä, että teknologia tekisi prosessin kuin prosessin hedelmälliseksi oppimistilanteeksi, tai että hyvään luentoon itsekseen keskittymällä ei voisi saavuttaa laadukasta oppimista. No mitä se teknologia-avusteisuuden ja yhteisöllisen oppimisen tarkoituksenmukainen käyttöönotto sitten tarkoittaa? Tähän kysymykseen voi vastata eräällä tavalla, kun ottaa ohjenuoraksi toisen lähtökohdan, josta alan tutkijat on varsin yksimielisiä. Laittamalla opiskelijaporukka tietokoneen eteen ei riitä tuotteliaaseen oppimiseen. Opiskelijaporukat tarvitsevat tukea työskentelylleen. Kärjistäen voisi ehkä sanoa, että tähän laaja yksimielisyys päättyykin, sillä yksiselitteistä vastausta siihen, millaiset tukimuodot olisivat kaikista tehokkaampia, ei ole eikä luultavasti tule. Erilaisten tukimuotojen vaikutusta esimerkiksi oppimistuloksiin tai oppimisen mielekkyyteen on kuitenkin tutkittu paljon. Saadut tulokset vahvistavat aiemmin sanottua. Sopivimpien tukimuotojen valinta riippuu tilanteesta ja tavoitteista. Kun lukuisia tutkimuksia on vedetty niin sanotuissa meta-analyyseissa yhteen, on päädytty jokseenkin samaan lopputulemaan. Erilaiset tukimuodot hyödyttävät oppimista keskimäärin yhtä paljon. Valtaosa olemassa olevasta tutkimuksesta on siis keskittynyt kysymykseen, mitä eri lailla tuetuissa oppimistilanteissa opitaan. Vähemmälle huomiolle on kuitenkin jäänyt, miten tietokoneavusteinen yhteisöllinen oppiminen etenee, ja miten erilaiset tukimuodot muuttavat oppimista ja sen prosesseja. Siirrynkin nyt esitykseni toiseen osioon. Kerron, miksi opetuksen kehittämisen lisäksi minulle oli tärkeää kehittää oppimisen tutkimusta. Aivan väitöskirjapolkuni alussa tarkastelin tietokoneavusteista yhteisöllistä oppimista ajallisesti, eli miten se oppiminen eteni näillä primetime-oppimisen malliin kuuluvilla ryhmätunneilla. Oppimisen ajallisen tarkastelun perusteella tunnistin ryhmien kohtaamia haasteita ja suunnittelin sen perusteella tukimuotoja teknologiseen oppimisympäristöön. Seuraavaksi tarkastelin ajallisesti, miten erilaiset tukimuodot muuttivat oppimisprosessien etenemistä. Koska tämä saattaa kuulostaa monimutkaiselta, palaan perusasioiden äärelle, siis käsihygieniaan. Havainnollistan väitöskirjani kantavaa ajatusta käsienpesun kautta. Sen sijaan, että tarkastelisimme pelkästään, mitkä sormenvälit käsienpesussa puhdistuvat, ja mittaisimme kämmenselän puhtautta, käsienpesun ajallisessa tarkastelussa kiinnitetään huomiota, miten käsiä pestään. Tällöin tutkija voisi tunnistaa käsienpesijöiden kohtaamia haasteita eri prosessin vaiheessa, ja suunnitella sen perusteella tukimuotoja käsienpesupisteelle. Yksi tukimuodosta saattaisi näyttää tältä. Tämän jälkeen tutkija tekee käsienpesun ajallista tarkastelua siitä, miten THL:n käsienpesuohje muuttaa käsienpesuprosessia verrattuna alkuperäiseen tilanteeseen. Muistaisivatko käsienpesijät useammin kastella kädet ennen saippuan ottamista ja sulkea hanan käsipaperilla vasta käsien kuivaamisen jälkeen? Väitöskirjassani oli kyse juuri tästä. Erona on, että tutkin käsienpesuprosessien sijaan oppimisprosesseja. Ensimmäisessä vaiheessa tunnistin siis 5 opiskelijan ryhmien kohtaamia haasteita ryhmätunneilla. Opiskelijoille oli esimerkiksi pulmallista tehdä kaikille ryhmäläisille näkyväksi ongelmanratkaisuprosessin eteneminen. Toiset ryhmissä saattoivat olla näppärämpiä hyödyntämään esimerkiksi käytössä olevia teknologioita. Tutkimuksessani tarkastelin erityisesti Python-ohjelmapätkiä, joita piti hiukan muokata ja vekslata, kun opiskelijat etsivät ratkaisuja ongelmiin. Tällaisissa tilanteissa nämä näppärät opiskelijat eivät sanallistaneet muulle ryhmälle, miten ja miksi he sitä Python-ohjelmaa käyttävät. Toisaalta osa opiskelijoista jätti kertomatta muille, että kaikki tehtävänannossa esiintyneet peruskäsitteet eivät olleet hallussa. Kun osa ryhmästä painaa kaasua ja toiset vetävät toistuvasti käsijarrusta, syntyy turhautumista. Ongelmanratkaisuprosessi otti toistuvasti takapakkia, kun yhteisen pohjan ja jaetun ymmärryksen muodostamiseen ei käytetty ongelmanratkaisun alussa tarpeeksi aikaa. Halusin auttaa ryhmiä tämän yhteisen pohjan ja jaetun ymmärryksen muodostumisessa sekä tehdä heille näkyväksi teknologisten työkalujen eri toimintoja. Suunnittelin tunnistamieni haasteiden perusteella ryhmille tukea. Suunnittelin tukimuodot niin, että ne jäsensivät ongelmanratkaisuprosessia opiskelijoille vähän samaan tyyliin kuin THL:n 7-kohtainen ohje jäsentää käsienpesuprosessia. Yksi tukimuodoista ohjasi ryhmiä kirjoittamaan, miten he aikovat edetä kustakin ongelmanratkaisuprosessin vaiheesta eteenpäin. Kun tarkastelin ja vertailin ajallisesti tuettua ja ei-tuettua ryhmätyöskentelyä toisiinsa, huomasin, että kirjoittamisella näytti olevan toivottu rooli oppimisprosessissa. Se kannusti opiskelijoita tekemään omia ajatuksiaan näkyväksi ja toimimaan suunnitellummin erityisesti oppimisprosessin alussa, jolloin on tärkeää rakentaa yhteinen pohja ja jaettu ymmärrys siitä, miten edetä. Lisäksi kirjoittaminen lisäsi yhteistä pohdintaa ja reflektointia läpi oppimisprosessin. Huomasin kirjoittamisen myös ohjaavan ryhmiä tutustumaan annettuihin teknologisiin työkaluihin, kuten niihin Python-ohjelmiin, heti prosessin alussa, mikä helpotti niiden myöhempää ja tarkoituksenmukaisempaa hyödyntämistä. Eli kun kasvokkain tapahtuvassa ryhmätyöskentelyssä ryhmä joutuu kirjoittamaan ajatuksiaan ylös, saavutetaan samankaltaisia hyötyjä kuin ei-reaaliaikaisissa verkkokeskusteluissa. Omia ajatuksiaan saa tehdä rauhassa muille näkyväksi ilman säntäilyn tarvetta. Väitöskirjani tulosten perusteella uskallan haastaa oppimisen tutkijoita tarttumaan haasteeseen ja etsimään vastauksia kysymyksiin mitä ja ennen kaikkea miten eri tilanteissa opitaan. Näihin miten kysymyksiin onkin alettu enenevissä määrin vastata oppimisen ajallisen tarkastelun avulla. Mitä tapahtuu prosessin alussa, mitä sen lopussa ja miten erilaiset oppimisen hetket seuraavat toisiaan. Tutkimuksellisesti väitöskirjani keskeinen anti onkin oppimisen ajallisen tarkastelun menettelytapa, jonka kehitin tekemällä synteesin lähes 80 oppimisen ajalliseen tarkasteluun keskittyvästä tutkimuksesta. Kehittämääni menettelytapaa hyödyntämällä oppimisen ajalliseen tarkasteluun ja näihin miten kysymyksiin keskittyvä tutkimus voi olla jatkossa yhteismitallisempaa. Tällöin vältämme nykyisen tilanteen, jossa toiset puhuu aidasta ja toiset aidan seipästä. Kun keskitymme oppimiseen, aikaan ja miten kysymyksiin, ymmärrämme paremmin myös tietokoneavusteisen yhteisöllisen oppimisen tuen tarpeita ja millainen rooli tukimuodoilla oppimisprosesseissa on. Oppimisen ajallisen tarkastelun avulla on siten mahdollista löytää tukimuotojen suunnittelun periaatteita ja keinoja hioa tukimuotoja entistä paremmiksi. Omassa tutkimuksessani olevia tukimuotoja voisi kutsua teknologiaperustaisiksi. Opettaja lisäsi ohjeistusta teknologiseen oppimisympäristöön, mutta opiskelijat eivät tarvinneet opettajaa fyysisesti paikalle. Teknologiaperustaisilla tukimuodoilla voi olla paha kaiku. Joku voi ajatella, että nyt lämsällä keulii ja se on korvaamassa opettajat teknologiaperustaisilla tukihäkkyröillä. On kuitenkin kyse päinvastaisesta. Mitä tarkoituksenmukaisemmin osaamme hyödyntää teknologioiden mahdollisuuksia oppimisessa ja opetuksessa, sitä enemmän vapautuu opettajaresursseja aitoihin kohtaamisiin opiskelijoiden kanssa. Opettajan rooli ei muutoksessa pienene, mutta se muuttuu. Näin luonnontieteen osaajia löytyy jatkossakin etsimään ratkaisuja niihin ongelmiin, joiden kanssa tälläkin hetkellä kipuilemme. May I ask you, Professor Pedaste, as the opponent appointed by the faculty, to present the comments on my dissertation that you see justifiable?
Yes. Honored Doctoral Assessment Committee, Kostos, doctoral candidate, ladies and gentlemen. First, I would like to thank the Faculty of Education and Psychology of the University of Jyväskylä for the invitation to be a reviewer and opponent of Joni Lämsä's dissertation. And second, I would like to say that it's a great privilege to have this dissertation defense here in face-to-face settings. It's maybe the first time for me this year to have a face-to-face dissertation defense. And in this difficult time regarding COVID-19 virus, and I believe that this research on the topics as the one of the doctoral candidate helped to make an important step forward to increase knowledge base of us as to ensure agency in teaching and learning in whatever situation is needed. Thank you. So, I believe now we can go to the public examination at this, as it is said. So I decided to structure my examination according to the guidelines set by the University of Jyväskylä. And first, I started to think about how the guidelines say about what needs to be discussed first. And then I found from the materials that were just handed out by the doctoral candidate to me, that first I need to focus on methodological and general questions. When I got the materials beforehand, then in the instructions there was that I need to focus on methodological general issues. So then I started to think that do I have questions or issues? In my notes, actually, I defined those methodological and general matters. Because I really found that that this study has been so interesting and well done that I don't have any major issues to discuss. So that's an opening statement, if I may. But indeed, it would be good to point out some general matters that maybe might be important to frame the following discussion. And I would start from the analysis of the title of the thesis. And then after that, we will have some nice discussion, I hope, with some questions as well. The thesis is titled Developing, one word, the temporal analysis, another aspect, computer supported, it's specific type of something. Third, collaborative learning, which seems to be for me the key topic of the study in some kind of context, and it's inquiry, but not simple inquiry as such, but scaffolded inquiry. So that there could be highlighted even six important keywords for me, at least, in the title of the thesis. And I believe that this already shows the value of the thesis as well. And also, I find that there are some challenges related to having so many different keywords in the title already, six of them. Of course, I would, if I see that that collaborative learning is really in the middle of the thesis, then I believe we all understand the value of collaborative learning, and especially in the lockdown times when we have to find and practice new forms of collaboration. International PISA test sets now more and more emphasis on collaborative problem solving, so that it's definitely one of the 21st century skills or general competencies as we name them in Estonian context. Then second, the computer-supported aspect. I see that this looks at the general level something simple, but it is actually not. For example, I have realized even in among my colleagues who are professors of education sometimes that it's really difficult actually support learning using computers. And even more difficult might be to support collaborative learning with computers. And in one of my team's recent study, we found that about half of science teachers in guiding their students to use smartphones and tablets only as a source of information in Estonian context. And less than a fifth of teachers ask their students frequently to use smartphones or tablets for collaborative learning. Therefore, the key question is really how to use computers to really support collaboration and learning or collaborative learning even more specifically. So I was very happy about the selection of this topic for your thesis. Third, it's a follow-up from the previous comment. I would say that luckily Joni Lämsä has focused in his dissertation especially on the how question and found an innovative method for analyzing this question, temporal analysis. Thus, the study seems to be methodologically very promising and pointing to a very important expected outcome, enhanced computer-supported collaborative learning. Fourth, even more, we can read from the title that the study tries to develop the temporal analysis. So the dissertation really might also have methodological value. And I will come back to this later. And as we discussed earlier the doctoral candidate, this study actually didn't have that kind of goal in the beginning of the study. And the doctoral studies of Joni Lämsä have lasted only 4 years, which is really not a long period. And in this time to come up with new ideas, it's really, really amazing. Fifth, the study is focusing on a specific context inquiry. And for me, this is a very valuable choice because I see inquiry skills and inquiry-oriented mindset as the key objectives to be achieved in science education. And this is also my background. In many countries, this has been highlighted in national curricula. But indeed, we see that it's not applied in learning as much as it should be. Therefore, we see again that the how question is maybe not well studied. And finally, sixth, the study is not focusing simply on inquiry, but scaffolded inquiry. And we already know from previous studies that open inquiry is not as effective as scaffolded process. Therefore, it's a logical choice for the study, and I'm happy about this choice. So, I find that the title of the thesis is very promising. The topic is very relevant. However, as I already said in the beginning, it might be also challenging, especially in short time, as 4 years, in a case of so many different topics that are combined in this thesis. So I also imagine that one can be lost in understanding the focus of the study. And I see at least 4 different PhD studies hidden in this one study. For example, one could be using temporal analysis in the context of computer-supported learning. And these outcomes could be applied in different contexts. It would be a very valuable study. Another one developing the method of temporal analysis. And again, the outcomes could be applied in designing other studies. And all third, understanding how temporal analysis could be applied in the context of inquiry-based learning. Or fourth, understanding how scaffolds of inquiry-based learning could be developed based on the findings of temporal analysis. And I believe that each of them would be enough for a PhD study. So that's why I have my first question to you, that maybe you had some similar questions during your journey, during your PhD studies, and or at least in the beginning of the study. Maybe you had some different questions. So That's why I would like to understand what is, in your view, the main focus of the study. Did you consider some alternatives, and why you decided to focus on this particular focus, what you have?
Okay, thanks for the rather long introduction. Yes, it's true that the title, it's rather long, and there are many issues involved. If going back to the beginning of my PhD, there was kind of a coincidence in a way that this prime time learning model that I also presented in Lectio, it was implemented for the first time at the same time when I started my PhD. And as I was one of the teachers in this pilot course, it was rather a natural choice that I will focus on that context. And in this prime time learning model, these group working sessions, those were rather new element, because one background idea behind those group working sessions was that those kind of replace lectures, traditional lectures. And my very first aim of research was to examine that what is actually happening in those group working sessions, and try to describe that what is going on there. Are students talking about physics or some other issues? And maybe regarding that temporal analysis, it became that way that when I wanted to describe that how those learning processes occur, I found myself describing the temporal dynamics of those learning processes. So that was the first point. So it was not the original idea that I didn't know that, okay, I need temporal analysis to do that, but it revealed during the process. The second issue kind of related to curriculum development of Department of Physics was that at the same time when these prime-time learning model courses were implemented, also these kind of numerical problem-solving tools were implemented into the basic level physics courses in a way that students learn to use numerical problem-solving tools as a part of their content studies. And those numerical problem-solving tools, such as those Python programs, those were implemented into those group working sessions. And when students use, for example, Python or some simulations to solve problems, we rapidly find that they are in fact doing inquiry. So by that way, I ended up to this inquiry-based learning framework, and that setting was in computer-supported collaborative learning settings. In this case, the computer support, what that meant, of course, students were working face-to-face in a technological learning environment, but the computer support came in that way that the set of problems that students did, it was very well organized by teachers of the course. It was very structured and research-based set of problems. We didn't put them just to work together in front of computers, but we carefully considered that what kind of problems would be the most optimal ones for those group working sessions. But the last thing that I have not yet mentioned is this scaffolding. When I started to study those inquiry-based learning processes, when students work, for example, with these Python programs, I realized that even though the problems were already rather guided in a way that the problem was given, the technological resources were given, they still needed guidance that how to externalize their thinking, for example, in those group working sessions. And by that way, I ended up to designing the scaffolds and also analyzing their role in those group working sessions. So,
thank you.
And, yeah.
Thank you. You put it very nicely. So that I believe that kind of example actually shows how a researcher should grow throughout the studies. So that it's really, really nice to hear how you started from something and then you discovered something and then you read more and then you apply new methods, and so that it's really excellent. So, okay, so now I would go step by step to 9 different topics that need to be covered in the evaluation of the thesis, and I have some questions regarding some of those topics, maybe not about all of them. But the first one you mentioned is research topic. We already covered, I believe, this more or less, design and setting of research questions. And I very much like that that you focused so heavily on deep understanding how the learning is happening in small groups and how to capture this, how to analyze this. So that I believe that you said it correctly that not many studies have focused on that kind of in-depth analysis. And if you don't understand in deeply what is happening in the learning process, then we cannot scaffold it effectively. That's why I also found that the main focus in your study is on the how question and the other aspects are framing the how question. So that about what we are asking this how question and how to study this how question and that kind of things. So I totally agree that it's a very important topic. And regarding this, I also find that the design of your study in general is quite perfect. You start from understanding the concepts and methods using literature review, then develop something based on this and test it out. Wonderful, quite classical. So what I didn't find clearly in your thesis is research questions. And maybe it's purposeful. My question comes with that as well. For example, if I started to think about what type of study you have, then I started to think that on one hand, you are trying to design scaffolds. Is it a design study or what it is? So, because in case of design studies, often we don't have research questions. We have some aims, and you have clearly stated your research aims. That is wonderful. So, on the other hand, for example, in table one, you mention also some questions that could be taken as research questions somehow. How computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning occurs, and how differences emerge between the scaffolded and non-scaffolded conditions. Therefore, my second question would be to ask you how you would characterize your study, what type of problem you solve, what type of problem it is you solve, actually, and how would you classify your study according to its design?
Yes, regarding, you mentioned that, and I agree that there are some elements of, for example, design-based research that I observe something and then I design, not maybe interventions, but scaffolds in this case. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't call it design-based research, as there was only kind of one iteration. So once I observed, then I designed, and then I observed another time. Regarding it's also true that there are no exact research questions, but there are very exact research aims, as you mentioned. And maybe in this summary part of this dissertation, I, of course, because you have those different substudies, 4 different substudies. In my case, you have to go to the higher level from those. And regarding, for example, substudies 3, in which I studied the needs for scaffolds, and substudy 4, in which I studied the role of the scaffolds. By nature, those were very different compared to, for example, substudy 1, mm-hmm. which was a systematic literature review. So it's rather challenging to put it in one word, what's the what's the research orientation in a way. And that's why I decided that I structure the summary part in a way that there is clearly this kind of more theoretical part relating to this temporal analysis, mm-hmm. development, the procedure of it, and also understanding better that what are the temporal aspects. In fact, we are more and more talking about in the literature. And then there are these methodological and empirical aims, mm-hmm. that I covered in sub-studies 3 and 4.
Okay, thank you. apologize me, because it was also a kind of provocative questions, because it was really not covered in your thesis, and of course that kind of questions that are not so directly related to what you have written in the thesis, these are a bit more difficult. But you showed very well that you know educational research beyond your thesis as well, so about different kinds of research designs and so on. Okay. The second topic to cover is theoretical framework and conceptual clarity. And I see that your theoretical framework focuses first on computer-supported collaborative learning and more specifically on computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning. When I read your thesis, then it's interesting that you start your abstract with a nice sentence that asks me to discuss something. So the first sentence is that computer-supported collaborative learning frequently takes the form of inquiry-based learning. And maybe it's a bit language-related issue that I have difficulties in understanding it. So that maybe you can help me. If one concept takes the form of another concept, then this need to be overlapping somehow. Through the thesis, I am a bit confused if actually inquiry-based learning is really a context, as it is said in the title, or it's indeed the learning process in the focus, as is in the computer-supported collaborative learning. So that is one part of the other one, or they are the same, or on the same level, and overlapping a bit, or how these two concepts, computer-supported collaborative learning and inquiry learning, relate to each other?
Okay. In this dissertation, those overlapped in a way that this inquiry-based learning, it was implemented in these collaborative learning settings, and there was that computer support. But in general, those are separate concepts in a way. Mm-hmm. There may be computer-supported collaborative learning without elements of inquiry-based learning, and also you can implement inquiry-based learning or use inquiry-based learning as a pedagogical approach without mm-hmm. computers or without the support of peers. So in this dissertation, those kind of overlapped, because those inquiry-based learning processes and those problem-solving processes occurred in the CSCL settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that I am happy that you say that there are still different concepts and could be studied not as synonyms, but separately, yeah. as well, so that it yeah. was.
Yes, yeah. And if I can comment yeah. a bit, the first sentence in the abstract you referred to, it was based on the, it was a meta-analysis by Young and Cindy Nalo-Silver mm-hmm. et al., who studied that how this CSCL has been implemented in yeah. science education, and they found that this mm-hmm. inquiry-based learning was the most popular yeah. pedagogical approach. Mm-hmm. So for that finding, this mm-hmm. first sentence of abstract was mm-hmm. based on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With this, I am totally fine. And then, as you also highlight now, and several places in the thesis, that inquiry-based learning could be taken as one approach. With this, I am very much on the same line. So Yeah, in this context, I can say that I'm completely on the same track with you in conceptualizing both the computer-supported collaborative learning and inquiry-based learning, and there are only minor discussion topics what I found in reading your thesis in this context. I find that you have given a very good overview on this. But for example, it would be good if you elaborate a bit more the value of collaboration in small groups. So you mentioned that for, groups of 4 to 6 learners are good, and collaboration means shared learning process and shared learning activities. But why are these good? Why are the shared learning activities and shared learning process really needed? What are the benefits for the learners?
Yes. First of all, if considering, for example, physics students or students from whatever disciplines, these kind of collaborative skills and are needed, for example, from the viewpoint of working life. So mm-hmm. there is kind of value of collaboration so that it prepares our students of higher education for the working life. But also what other values there are, of course, there are lots of research that have examined, for example, that how do we learn in collaborative learning settings and how in more individual learning settings. Mm-hmm. And usually the result is that this collaboration, it's favor learning outcomes and also maybe other skills mm-hmm. that are tried to achieve in, mm-hmm. in these learning settings. And in addition to these maybe benefits with in terms of learning outcomes and the skills students need in working life, in this particular case, we also had other aims why we wanted to rely so heavily on this collaborative learning, as we wanted that our physics students would be socially integrated to the community that would also foster the progress of their studies and would decrease, for example, the dropout rates. Mm-hmm. So maybe those two are the main reasons.
Okay.
For it, yeah.
Because if I follow up from this, then maybe you know that in Estonia it's more than in Finland that among students there is very common that kind of competition culture instead of collaboration culture. Mm-hmm. So that also internationally, for example, there have been discussions between Estonians and Finnish people about the PISA results, for example. But if we are discussing PISA results and if you would like to be good in PISA, then it's not supporting collaboration, maybe. It's showing competition culture somehow. Mm-hmm. So that I see that sometimes it's not clear if collaboration is really a real goal or just something that is valued but not really valued in the learning process, and that's why I thought that maybe you can somehow show the real benefits of collaborative situations compared to competitive ones. Of course, this was not focus of your study. But maybe this is something to consider in the future as well, to show that different learning outcomes could be achieved better in collaborative settings.
Yes, that's true. And also relating what we already discussed regarding these how questions. So in the future, it would also be interesting to focus also on those what questions and what learning in fact occurs in these mm-hmm. collaborative learning settings. I'm not sure whether it's relating to this maybe competition culture, but for example, in the context of physics learning, I think that many students have this kind of culture that they are used to work mostly individually. Mm-hmm. So, and when we design these kind of collaborative learning situations, we have to carefully consider that aspect because what I already mentioned was that we carefully try to structure those sessions that there are very those are very well ordered beforehand. So mm-hmm. that the problems are that kind of that they force the kind of discussions and argumentations, and maybe there are some issues in which students may have some misconceptions, and you mm-hmm. may argue something, and then I try to do better counter arguments, for example, mm-hmm. in a way. And in this case, I think this collaborative learning really have some added value when we discuss some misconceptions, for example.
Yeah, definitely. You don't externalize those misconceptions in the individual learning settings, and then you don't get any feedback on this, and then you don't even know that you have misconceptions. You believe that you have a good understanding that actually this is not challenged by others. So that in this case, I totally agree that it's something valuable, but often it is not made visible. And that's why I really value your study as well, that you focus on this how question, because in collaboration as well, it's very important how the collaboration is supported, so that that all the values of the collaboration are visible for the learners as well. So second very important focus of your theoretical framework is on inquiry-based learning. And what I found in reading your thesis that you described well the different inquiry phases. But what I missed a bit there, and it would be good to hear your opinion about this, is that what are the interrelations between different phases? Of course, I saw that in describing the phases, you missed it a bit, but actually what was good, you later still showed that in your study, you saw that these different phases are really interrelated with each other. So, but first I really felt that you described the inquiry as a rather linear approaches, which is a bit contradiction with the intention of me and my colleagues, what we had in publishing our article on inquiry cycle, the one on what you rely in your work. And for example, what I found there a bit in contradiction is when you explained the investigation phase, so that then I got it in this way that the first sub-phase of the learners in investigation phase is to explore research questions, and second to experiment or test the hypothesis. And actually in this, maybe it was not well written in the article what we wrote, but it was meant differently. It was like two parallel pathways, so that actually from questioning you can start exploration, and if you already know more about the topic and you can formulate hypotheses, then you can start experimentation, but you don't have to have the research questions in case of experiments. So and the schema of the inquiry cycle consisted actually many arrows describing the possibilities to move from one phase to another one, and also backwards. And I believe that to continue the discussion about the collaboration and the value of collaboration, then the collaboration in small groups is in itself a scaffold already to support that kind of movement between different inquiry phases, so that it initiates that. And you also claim that it was the case in your study as well, that the learners actually moved back and forward. So my question would be, what does it mean? What do you think of this, and how do you see that the inquiry phases are linked to each other? So that in which way, according to your understanding, these phases are linked to each other?
Yes. First of all, I have to say that maybe there is something I would have needed to sharpen in my mm-hmm. my thesis, because what you said, I completely agree. And if that was not the idea or impression you got, then there is something to sharpen in the future. First of all, regarding the relationships between the faces, as I say in the summary part, I didn't accept that students go some predetermined pathways, mm-hmm. but my approach was really explorative in a way that I, through this temporal analysis, I studied that how students move back and forth between the different inquiry-based learning phases. And as you also said, I think it's very aligned with your framework, as you referred those arrows in the figure in your article. So there are many different pathways that students can go through, and also, of course, teachers can try to design certain kind of pathways, maybe. What was maybe the case in sub-study 4, in which there were those different types of procedural scaffolds. Mm-hmm. Regarding those subphases, for example, the subphases of the investigation phase, exploration, for example, that is more related to investigating the research question. If you formulate some, not maybe that you may do not have any kind of exact relations between variables, but you just want to explore what are the relations, then you may start to explore, and then if you have more exact hypothesis, then mm-hmm. you are free to experiment maybe mm-hmm. at the very beginning of the investigation phase. I'm aware that these are kind of separate. Those may follow each other, that you may iterate your hypothesis, for example, after some exploration. But I tried to only kind of present those different subphases without saying that what is the actual order mm-hmm. of those. And in this thesis, I didn't consider those subphases at all. In fact, in my analysis, in a way that, of course, when I coded the transcriptions, then I carefully considered that what are the subphases and what are the different inquiry activities in the different phases. But in the results, for example, those are not visible. So regarding, for example, conceptualization phase, some groups might formulate some research questions mm-hmm. they started to investigate, and maybe some groups were able to even formulate some hypotheses that they should start to experiment with the Python program. But I didn't consider that in the results. Also, I agree that this collaboration and also those technological or this computer support and this environment as a whole, it indeed supported mm-hmm. or scaffolded these inquiry-based learning processes. But as I said, and what I have done and what has already found in literature is that students still need some or may need some additional guidance or scaffold even in these CSCL settings. So, and for example, in this case, because there were 5 students in a group, it's rather big group size, in fact, but it was partly because of practical reasons. So indeed they needed support, for example, in this externalizing mm-hmm. their ideas and thoughts in these different inquiry-based learning phases. And because of the lack of this externalization in these non-scaffolded conditions specifically, there were maybe not that optimal transitions mm-hmm. between those different phases.
Yeah. What I see here in collaborative situations, what becomes especially important on what many of the previous studies haven't focused so clearly, and where your the value of your study might be is to analyze how discussion emerges in these inquiry processes, because this is really we have seen that the discussion phase is like in parallel with all other phases, so that you can really discuss on the topics you have just covered in, I don't know, orientation or conceptualization phase. And there you really need to externalize, as you say, the ideas you have, and if you don't do that, then the discussion is weak, so that you don't benefit from this. And in this case, it's really, really important. So that I believe that through that kind of collaborative settings, we can really focus on this analysis, how to support discussion in inquiry process, and that's really valuable. Okay, so according to the guidelines, the thesis also needs to give clear definitions and rationale for the concepts used in the thesis. And this was one of my concerns in the pre-examination phase, and I'm happy that you have very well responded to that, so that I found several clear definitions, and thank you about this. So, and I totally agree with the selection of the definitions and how you have framed them, so that it's really, really good. But I still have some little clarifying questions in this context as well. So in case of computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning, which is now like a merged concept of computer-supported collaborative learning and inquiry-based learning, you first describe those two concepts separately. I very much agree with those definitions separately. And then you put those two together and synthesize your own definition of computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning. And in this context, I saw that you chose some of the aspects covered in the separately given definitions, but not all. And for example, you, in case of computer-supported collaborative learning, you were focusing on two very important aspects, that there are shared processes and shared learning activities, but in the merged definition, you don't mention these anymore. So that how did you reach to the concept or definition of the concept of computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning, which is the key topic of your study?
Yes, as you mentioned, I did the definition in a way how you described that. I first defined CSCL in a way that I focused on collaborative learning aspects first, and then what does computer support mean in this setting, and then I defined inquiry-based learning separately. Of course, when you want to define something, and particularly in PhD thesis, it's very valuable that definitions are very exact and precise, but those also should be rather concise in a way that you do not use too many words and sentences. And that's why I ended up to this one sentence definition, which is given. And regarding, for example, those shared learning activities and processes, I really agree that those are needed in collaborative learning, but I feel or I argue that those are implicitly visible in this negotiation process. Mm-hmm. So when students negotiate that how they will follow the practices of scientists to solve problems, it implicitly means, or at least it should be in a way that they go through these different shared mm-hmm. learning activities and processes mm-hmm. in this negotiation process.
Yeah, let's hope so. Maybe yes. Maybe it's not so evident. Maybe this is something to support with scaffolds, like some scripts or so, that you need to think on that kind of process as well. So that what kind of processes are there in one or other phase you need to complete, and then how you can share those processes between the group members, and what are the shared learning activities, and what are our shared goals we would like to achieve with the learning process. So that this is something to consider maybe. Another concept, what I found that might be discussed a bit, is scaffold. We haven't discussed this at all today. And you described it as a type of guidance with high specificity. And you also said that scaffolds are something that provide students with the components of the process and thus structure the process, and then the assistance provided to solve the problems that are challenging to complete with students' own effort. But what I missed a bit, maybe again it was a purpose of your study, but what I have learned before is that in case of defining scaffolds, often is highlighted the idea of fading out the scaffolds. And you still explained that the scaffolds need to be specific. So I also mentioned Vygotsky there regarding the zone of proximal development, which actually already involves the idea of fading out, because if the zone of proximal development is changed, then you need to change the scaffolds, or maybe at one point scaffolds are not needed at all. So what do you think about this? What do you think of adding this element to the definition of scaffolds in the context of your studies, or the follow-up studies maybe after the PhD thesis?
You mean this concept of fading?
Yes.
Yes. I'm aware of this, that this fading is considered to be an important part of scaffolding. In this case, because, for example, if considering that group working sessions, there were different problems students solved, and I scaffolded individual problems. Mm-hmm. So in this case of individual problem, the fading is a bit problematic in a way that if you want to fade, that there is at the beginning there is more scaffold, and that how in the practice the fading would take place. It's a challenging, and I didn't use the explicitly this fading component in this case, and that's why I didn't mention it there. In the future, and also if considering the results of sub-study 4. And it's also related to this adaptive scaffolding in a way that, particularly in the case of those script scaffolds, it was visible that students somehow ignored it. So maybe it should have been faded, the script scaffold, so that students would have used it and utilized it in their learning process. But then there should be some... If considering those group working sessions, because there is no teacher present, but those teaching resources are used elsewhere, you should somehow use those technological environments to monitor the learning, and somehow in a way that technological learning environments do the decision of fading and adapting the scaffold. But that's indeed something I could do in the future.
Because I started to think that they're also used in literature. Simpler words like support and adaptive support. If you say talk about adaptive scaffolding, so that there are, maybe it's just adaptive support and adaptive scaffold is that adapts to the learning process and fades out and in if needed, according to the needs of particular learners or on the group level as well. So that's also an idea.
Yeah. That's a good idea. And yes, these concepts are kind of a bit messy because there are so many different conventions and research traditions to use these different concepts. So,
And a follow-up from this is that you describe very well the components you used in scaffolding, like sense-making, process management, articulation, reflection. You also mentioned scaffolding strategy, but what was a bit unclear for me, what you meant by this strategy and how did you develop this strategy for the scaffolds in your study? So that and also what was the theoretical rationale, because the strategy could be different for different groups maybe, but maybe you had something behind of this.
Yes, in this framework by Quintana and others, they have these different science components, mm-hmm. science inquiry components that should be scaffolded. And they, in their article, they provide different kind of strategies that how mm-hmm. that could be done in the practice. And in this dissertation, I have presented those strategies that I used. And how I ended up using those strategies, it was based on the findings of sub-study 3 and mm-hmm. those challenges that also productive practices I identified from those groups, mm-hmm. learning sessions.
Do I understand correctly that you also mentioned collaboration scripts? Mm-hmm. So that how are these related with each other, the strategies and is it so that the collaboration scripts, according to your understanding, are like tools to implement the strategies or to support the strategies, or how these are related to with each other?
Yes. So, for example, in this case, because there are those three different components that mm-hmm. are going to be scaffolded, and for each component there are different scaffolding strategies, then the script is kind of one tool mm-hmm. that you can use to implement all yep. those different strategies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was the case in my study.
Mm-hmm. Then I understood it correctly. And the last concept I would like to discuss a bit is one of the key words in the thesis, which is temper analysis. And I didn't find the definition of this, what it is. I find the description, how it has been done and what it consists and that kind of things. Or even more specifically, also use temporal log data analysis, temporal log sequence analysis, so that I understand that this is something that is clarified in your study, what the temporal analysis is, how to conduct it in the context of computer-supported collaborative learning, and maybe it was even not clearly defined before as a concept, but I believe that you are so good expert in this area already that you are the best one to try to conceptualize it by a definition, so that maybe you can try to define it now. What is temporal analysis? Very shortly.
That's very true that the whole concept of temporal analysis is very loosely defined, and different researchers define it different ways depending on what actual methods they are using. And one of the very important aims of this systematic literature review and also this study was to try to understand that what are those different conceptualizations of this mm-hmm. temporal analysis. And I ended up to one definition I provided in the page 23 in this book, and I say that I use the term temporal aspects of CSCL when analyzing learning events to understand CSCL as a process unfolding over time. And I continue. I broadly define the temporal aspects of CSCL as those of focusing on the characteristics of events or interrelations between events over time. And in this literature review, I found that those events, what those actually mean, those are at the core of the definition. Those are conceptualized from the process data, whatever it is. And depending mm-hmm. on the process data, the events can be related to learner interaction. For example, who is talking to whom. Mm-hmm. And when also the use of technological resources, for example, based on log data, that what nonverbal activities students mm-hmm. are conducting. And the third aspect is those ideas and thoughts students are working with. For example, in my case, those events related to those different mm-hmm. inquiry-based learning phases that I identified from those communication mm-hmm. episodes.
Okay, but in this case, I have a follow-up question so that you defined what is temporal aspects of computer-supported collaborative learning. Do you think that there is no need on a more general level to define the general concept of temporal analysis?
Yeah, of course, you can define the temporal analysis as an analysis in which you analyze those temporal aspects of CSCL.
Exactly.
But yes, of course, this is one definition. I think it's rather broad at the moment, and that's because this whole research area is developing so rapidly. There are so many new and novel data sources, data analysis methods, that it's rather challenging to capture all those into one compact definition. But I have done my best, and I'm rather happy with this definition, and I can also defend it now. But of course, when this field develops in the future, I think that we can also come up with more maybe precise and definitions, and also maybe let's see what happens, but maybe this area can also be split somehow based on the different research traditions, for example. Yes. Such as is in the case, for example, if you do this kind of statistical inferences based on variables, there are different kind of approaches to use those variables to understand learning.
I agree that it's a challenge for the future anyway, so that even if it will be defined today, the area is developing so rapidly that actually in a few years maybe we have to revise the definition. But I also tried to look after this definition from literature, and I didn't find that. That's why I turned to you to ask it from you. Okay, good. So where we are. Then according to the guidelines, there is also asked that we need to discuss something about the methods and data. And you chose the temporal data analysis to approach the how question to understand how scaffolds could support computer-supported inquiry learning. So I believe it's very evident already why temporal analysis, and I am really happy about this, because I really agree that it's very good to approach the how question. And my question in this context would be, probably when you found this temporal analysis as a method during your PhD studies, then maybe you found some other methods as well to study the how question, because then you had to make the selection based on some rationale. Maybe you can go back to this and open it a bit, why you chose temporal analysis. So,
yeah, do you mean that why I chose temporal analysis in general, or why did I use those specific temporal analysis methods I used?
First, even in more general, because now how questions are often asked with some other methods as well. Yes. So, for example, with, I don't know, classical observations, for example, that might be also considered somehow as a temporal analysis if we go in depth with those methods. But why is this?
At the very beginning, when the first aim was kind of to describe those group working sessions, that what is happening there, what kind of activities, and when I ended up to focus on particularly these problems in which there are those numerical problem-solving tools, when the learning is basically based on this inquiry-based learning. And I started with this very traditional method that has been used to analyze learning processes, so that you code the transcriptions and then you count the frequency of different codes, and then you try to understand that how the different aggregated frequencies maybe lead to different kind of outcomes. But when I did that for the different groups, I realized that it doesn't capture the differences between groups. That when you watch the videos, listen to groups discussions, and when you look at those aggregated frequencies, you cannot capture the dynamics. It may be rather small elements in dynamics that have a significant impact mm-hmm. on the actual learning process. And by that way, I ended up to this temporal analysis, and I wanted to try to describe that what is happening at the beginning, in the middle, at the end, and how different types of learning events are following each other. In this substudy 3, which was firstly published, I relied on those visualizations. And in general, if considering, for example, time series analysis, visualizations are usually the first step you take, because mm-hmm. those are very descriptive and you can identify some sort of fluctuations, for example, or variation that occur periodically, for example. So I saw that was rather natural choice to do this kind of temporal analysis first, to see that what is happening there, what are the important elements in the dynamics that should be considered in more in depth. And I noticed that those sequences between the different, or the transitions mm-hmm. between the different inquiry-based learning phases, it somehow characterized the different learning progress
yeah.
that occurred. And that way I relied on this sequential analysis, for example, in the future mm-hmm. study.
Yeah. Okay, that's very good. Of course, I agree that the video data what you used, it's a very rich format of data for that kind of analysis. And but on the other hand, I also find that it's very difficult to scale up with that kind of analysis. That's why I thought that maybe you also have found that some other methods could be used in order to give kind of similar results, but they are maybe less, maybe need less resources from your side in order to collect and analyze this data, because it's automatically, it's very difficult to analyze videos, for example. So that it's, maybe you have some ideas in this context.
Yeah, what I have already used was that log data, mm-hmm. for example, that it's very true that it's very challenging to scale up in a mm-hmm. way that you could analyze, for example, tens of groups based on this kind of manual transcriptions and then coding and do whatever temporal analysis. I tried to tackle or address this challenge by, as I said, rely on the log data. And in this substudy 4, I had almost 50 groups mm-hmm. whose log data I analyzed, and then I had a few groups in those different conditions whose learning I analyzed based on this video data. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to find the connections that how we can interpret that log data that could be useful also mm-hmm. in terms of this adaptive support by using this video data. And of course, the results are very kind of first steps in this area, but rather promising mm-hmm. still. Regarding this video data, how it could be scaled up, if you want to somehow focus on the conversation and discussions, what is taking place in those face-to-face settings, for example, there are many approaches in automatic analysis you could use. There are, maybe Finnish is rather a difficult language, but there are still some attempts to transcribe, for example, Finnish audio data automatically. And then what we have also done is automatic content analysis methods that you kind of use machine learning methods. You code a small mm-hmm. portion of the transcriptions, and then based on those linguistic features of the different phases, machine tries to identify what are the important characteristics in the different phases, and then we use some kind of test set mm-hmm. that could be that could automatically analyze the rest of the transcriptions. And that's if those methods develop, or when those methods develop, it's rather nice way to scale up these studies yeah. in the future.
The future is promising. So
yes.
I see that you have a lot to study when the methods to use in the studies will develop as well. So that it's really, really interesting. One more aspect I would like to discuss about your methods you used is the methods of literature review. And you stated from the search, you started from the search and limited yourself with high impact journals. At least you said so. Also, it's a bit in contradiction with the figure one that explains that you search in databases that, that do not cover only high impact journals, so that in database might be different ones. So that, so, but can you explain it? Did you just mention that, that you found mainly high impact journal articles, or actually you used everything what you found, or you limited somehow yourself?
Yes, so I used everything I found that were peer-reviewed journal articles from those three databases I described in figure one. There were also journals with rather low impact factor, for example, but it turned out that, in fact, most of those papers were published in high impact journals, and those are listed, but there were many other journals as well.
Okay, that's just a description of the results in this case,
yes.
Not as a methodological approach to focus on high impact journals only.
Yeah, that could be a bit misleading. The idea behind presenting those was that this is the research area that is gaining growing interest also in this.
Yeah, and sometimes in case of the emerging areas of studies, it might be that they are not published in strong journals because it's something new and not established so well, that sometimes you might find very good articles in some journals or even some conference papers sometimes that are not with that might be with very good quality actually, but not accepted by classical strong journals sometimes.
That's completely true. But as I said, the journal articles were included in whatever journal it was. But that's true that those conference proceedings would also be rather interesting because many of those novel ideas and data are presented there first. So, but it was the decision I made so that I could cope with the number of articles in this case.
Okay, then regarding the results, that is also one topic that need to be discussed according to the guidelines. I would actually follow up from the literature review, and I very much like the figure one, which is clearly showing your procedure of the search and selection of the articles for your literature review. But I was wondering in something that you did two searches. And in the first search, you identified 236 records. And in the second phase, many, many more, 405. And I saw that you revised your search terms based on the initial search. But how is it possible? What is your explanation? How did you get so many more records in the second search? Usually, the second search doesn't give much more than the initial search.
Yes, if I can describe this search procedure, when I searched those articles, I had three types of keywords. So the first keyword that had to be present was related to this temporality. And in the first phase of identification, the main word was temporal. And then there was this collaborative learning. It was the second key term, and then this computer support. And by using those terms, I ended up a bit over 200. And because when I conducted this literature search, I was already rather familiar with this research area, so I knew many articles that have been published in this field. And I noticed that, many of those are not included, in fact, in my first search, so there is something I need to revise so that I can capture the better image of the field. And I did it next. The next step I did was to identify from those 40 articles that was included after first phase all the methods they had used, so that I could get as broad list of methods that was mm-hmm. that was possible, and then I used those methods as keywords referring mm-hmm. to this temporality. So I replaced the temporal term with those different temporal analysis methods, mm-hmm. and then I ended up to those mm-hmm. over 400 mm-hmm. 400 hits, and of course there were many duplicates in the first and in the second identification, but still there were also many new articles that was included mm-hmm. based on this second source.
Yeah. Excellent explanation, and I very much like how you presented the keywords used in the search as well, so that it could be a good example as for the other authors as well. And I believe the article will be published soon, so that
let's hope the best.
Yeah. So. If you come to the end almost, then there need to be discussed conclusion and discussion of findings. I see that it has been very well done. I wouldn't go into discussion of the discussion, so that I see that this is nearly perfect. So that, but I would stop more a bit more about the relevance of the research and applicability of findings. So what I really value is that your study also has methodological outcome, and for example, the identified six key operators of temporal analysis to study computer-supported collaborative inquiry learning. These are really, really very, very useful, and the study is extremely valuable also because of the highlights of the value of how question and how it could be used to answer the questions what you had, so that it's really excellent. And also, I very much like your table 3 on page 42. It has a very good practical value to develop new scaffolds, writing scaffolds and script scaffolds, so that this is really, really, really valuable. So, but what I didn't find is that do you have also some suggestions to improve the inquiry-based learning process, so that this was, at least in the beginning, one of the main framework approaches you use, so that based on this analysis, how the students are conducting inquiry in small groups, maybe you also have some suggestions how to improve the framework what we developed based on the literature review many years ago.
Yeah, I have to say that the framework is really, really good, but it's also up to date. I would say that it worked well in our context as well. Maybe something that could be developed and could be highlighted is my findings in sub-study 4, in which I studied this inquiry-based learning process by using this temporal lag sequential analysis. And what was rather interesting that we had these two types of scaffolds, writing scaffold, script scaffold, and then we had also those non-scaffolded groups. And there were indeed differences in their learning processes, both in terms of their use of this Python program, but also in terms of how their conversation proceeded mm-hmm. when it was analyzed through this inquiry-based learning framework. And despite the differences, I found what I called inquiry-based learning sequence cluster. So there were three different inquiry-based learning sequence cluster in each conditions, in the scaffolded and non-scaffolded condition. And those results illustrated that this process could be captured with three broader phases. So first there was this those sequences that were related to orientation. So mm-hmm. students started to orientate to the problem, and it turned out that those groups who were writing scaffolded, those also conceptualized the problem as a mm-hmm. part of orientation before they started investigation. That mm-hmm. would be the thought that it's favorable. Mm-hmm. And those script scaffolded and non-scaffolded group in this first sequence cluster, they only oriented. Then there was that second cluster that included sequences associated with the investigation phase. And in this second cluster, those, for example, those non-scaffolded groups started to conceptualize the problem. Mm-hmm. So it occurred parallel with this investigation, and it might may cause some challenges that were visible in mm-hmm. in the third sub-study. And then third cluster included those sequences associated with conclusion and discussion mm-hmm. phases. So one cluster associated orientation, then one with investigation, and third with conclusion and discussion, and the conceptualization phase, which is maybe not that frequent in the overall process, but crucial, so that the students are able to succeed. So its positioning between the first and second cluster is rather interesting, and mm-hmm. it could be further investigated that which one of those two options could be more optimal for learning. Mm-hmm. And also what was a rather nice finding in those writing scaffolded groups, that in all those three different clusters, there were sequences associated with discussion. So okay. students all the time reflected and communicated what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting to examine in the future. That could the framework as a whole be revised based on those temporal progress of inquiry.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It would be very valuable. I also started to think that the framework of inquiry-based learning was developed so that the discussion phase was always like a following one to the other phases. So that you might maybe start with orientation and then you start discussion on your orientation. So that but I started to think that maybe in collaborative settings it's vice versa sometimes. So that you start discussing and then you end up with orientation or conceptualization or investigation. So that you already start investigating without specifying the problem in the orientation phase or something like that. So that it's also maybe the discussion should be on both sides of the other phases on the schema. Now mm-hmm. it's on the right side only. Maybe it should be on the left side as well. I started to think based on this.
Yeah.
These findings you have. Okay, there are also mentioned in the guidelines topics about reliability, validity, and ethical questions. And I don't have questions, comments about the reliability and validity issues, but in case of ethical aspects, I would like to highlight that these are very well reflected. That's good. And I only have a classical question that is used in case of testing two conditions, as you have. E.g., you had groups who got scaffolds and others who didn't get the scaffolds. And wasn't the second group in a disadvantaged situation? And was it an ethical risk there?
I would say that both groups were in very good condition in a way that in 2016, I collected the data from non-scaffolded groups.
Okay.
And in 2017 from those scaffolded groups. And for example, in this sub-study 4 in which I compared those, those groups who have conducted the course in two different years. So, mm-hmm. and also if considering the overall structure of the course, those scaffolded problems were a very kind of small part, for example, okay. regarding their overall performance mm-hmm. In the course. So I would say that there was not any disadvantages okay. regarding the scaffolding process.
Good, thank you. So composition and presentation of the work, that was all very clear the structure was logical and coherent. I already mentioned a few minor inconsistencies I found, but maybe it's just me who perceived it in this way. So that I really enjoyed reading that thesis, and I also enjoyed reading the short and clear overview of different concepts and the frameworks you described. That this was a very very easy to read, and I'm happy about this. So that it's really good. And the last topic that is mentioned in the guidelines is the evaluation of independent contribution. And in this context, you need to somehow show that you are an independent researcher. And of course, how do you assess it? One way is to look at the publications you have published. I don't know how much you have put effort in writing the thesis, where only you are listed as an author. In case of the other articles, you have many co-authors, which is usually good case, because in case of educational research, and not only, we need to benefit from the collaboration research as well as in your topic of collaborative learning. So I believe that it is good, and as we see, you have four articles, and in three of them you are the first author. That's really for me a good indication of you as an independent researcher, and demonstration of your skills of doing research, and during this public defense, I have also seen that you know a lot of your everything of your research, so that I don't have any doubts in this context. And one more aspect I would like to highlight for the others as well is that what I find exceptional is maybe two things. One is that that you have now almost finished your studies in 4 years, which is quite exceptional in international context as well, not only in Finland and Estonia, as I know. And not you have not only finished it, but also with such a good results, so that all your articles are published, or the last one is under revision, but indeed very, as I understood, very close to publishing already. So that and all the articles are in very strong journals. That's really impressive, and I would say that sometimes we have professors who do not publish in 4 years so many good articles as you have done during your PhD studies. That's why I really see that that you have done very great work. So, and now I would come to the concluding remarks. Okay. So, in conclusion, I can say that the thesis written by the doctoral candidate, the articles published in several high quality, high impact factor journals, and the public defense, what we just had now had, have left me no doubts that Joni Lamsa is a promising young researcher, and therefore I declare with full confidence that I recommend his dissertation to the faculty for approval. Thank you.
Honored opponent, I wish to convey my sincere thanks for the valuable comments you have given on my dissertation. Tämän jälkeen kehotan niitä arvoisia läsnäolijoita, joilla on jotain muistuttamista väitöskirjani johdosta, pyytämään puheenvuoron Kustokselta tekstiviestillä puhelinnumeroon, joka on ilmoitettu väitöstiedotteessa.
Okay, I see no messages coming. So, and no hands over here. So, the public examination is now concluded.
Ja lopuksi olette kaikki erittäin lämpimästi tervetulleita maljankohotukseen sekä kahvitarjouluun alakerrassa sijaitsevaan kahvila Belvedereen. Lisäksi muistutan teitä laittamaan nimenne väitöstilaisuuden osallistujaluetteloon, jota voidaan käyttää tarvittaessa koronavirukseen liittyvien tartuntaketjujen jäljittämisessä. Ja alakerrassa voidaan tehdä vaikka kyynärpää tervehdyksiä. Thank you.